My name is Daniel Shoptaw, an Arkansas accountant with a love for the Cardinals. I spent a lot of years watching the game before deciding to write about it. Now I express my thoughts and opinions at C70 at the Bat, part of the Cardinal Conclave. His name is Dan Buffa, a former Busch Stadium scoreboard operator with a passion for the game. His writing talents can be found throughout the internet on a variety of topics, including movies and anything St. Louis. You'll find him often bleeding out words at stlouissportsminute.com. Every week, we pool our knowledge and our opinions to create this podcast. Together, we are the best Dans in baseball. Welcome into episode 7 of Best Dans in Baseball. I'm Daniel Shoptaw, C70 at the Bat. That's Dan Buffa, SDL Sports Minute. We are recording this Friday night, a little bit of a change of pace. Friday night after the Cardinals have beaten the Braves 4-2 in what is always interesting ninth inning, because that doesn't matter who pitches the ninth inning, it's going to be interesting. No Rosenthal tonight, but Seacrest did his best Rosenthal imitation, which is the best Jason Isringhausen imitation, which I don't know how far back it goes, but it goes away. And we'll get to all that in a little while, but we have to start with the fact that John Mozeliak made a trade today. And I know we have talked a lot about what John Mozeliak should do, what we think he should do, and a lot of the times that has centered on first base. John's first move, at least, if not, I don't know if it's his only move, but his first move, at least, was to go shore up the bullpen. Goes to get Steve Cizik from Miami, gives up a double-A pitcher that most people had not heard of, I believe. So really, basically for free to some degree, except that they're paying, which, I mean, Cizik is making quite a bit of money. He was a closer at one time. I think he's making like $6 million or something like that, which is...
Yeah, 6.6, I think.
Yeah, pretty pricey for this bullpen especially. Now, it's possible the Cardinals would non-tender him in the offseason, but if they don't, he is arbitration eligible for next year, and they could have him again, and, you know, that obviously they could work out a deal or whatever. First thoughts on this trade. What'd you think when you heard about it?
You know, I liked it. I mean, there's been some rumblings about Cizik for a little bit. I mean, he's the guy that took over for the closing in Miami. I think who was the guy that burned out the San Diego Padres closer that went to Miami and burned out 2 years ago?
His last name was Heath Bell.
He took over for Heath Bell 2 years ago. And he pretty much never gave it back. I mean, this guy had, you know, 30 plus saves the last two seasons, and I looked him up, and he really had just had a rough April, and the Marlins sent him down, and he's kind of losing a little cheese on his fastball, and he got that back, and he's been really good for the past month. So if we can get any resemblance of the Steve Cizik from the last 2 years, I think this is a great move. You add another guy with closing experience between Rosenthal, Jordan Walden, and Cizik, and you have Seacrest, who's closing games tonight. Sam Tuivalala can really close games too. So you have five guys now in this bullpen when Walton gets back that close baseball games. And the way Mike Matheny likes to use Trevor Rosenthal, the more closers you have, the better. So, yeah, I mean, so I kind of liked it. And like you, I think I've heard of the guy that gave up just because I'm following John Nagel, who needs to be followed at Cardinals Farm. He knows everything about the Cardinals farm system, all the minor league teams. I think he mentioned his name one time. I think it's Kyle Barraclough or something like that. He's the double-A pitcher, and he's a starter. And I guess the Miami Marlins just thought, okay, we can get rid of this, you know, six whatever's left of that $6.65 million contract for Cizik, and, you know. And I think it's a great pickup. I think the bullpen kind of started to need some help. It's got, I think coming into the game, it had a 2.37 ERA, but it's kind of starting to bend a little bit, and we don't want it to break like it did in that road trip again against the Cubs and the Pirates. So I think it's a good move. You know, you didn't give up a lot, and the Cardinals, you know, if it's one thing they have some money to spend. I mean, they don't want to give up too many players, but if you get a guy like Cizik for basically nothing, he just strengthens your bullpen. You know, coming from the Miami Marlins, who without Giancarlo Stanton down there right now, I mean, they're kind of floating away in the race. I mean, they might be on the borderline, you know, second wild card if they can catch fire like ridiculously in August. But, you know, you got a guy coming to the Cardinals who's, you're going from one of the worst teams in the National League to one of the best. So that's got to be a great feeling for him.
Yeah, I mean, he tweeted out today that, you know, how excited he was about joining this organization had a pretty good, apparently a pretty good appreciation for the history and such of that nature. Now Miami's 41-55. They're not going anywhere. They're closer. They're going to closer to Philadelphia than anything else.
I think Randy Choate, they played together on Miami a couple of years ago, and he basically told Steve, you know, get ready to play in the playoffs, big guy.
Yeah. And you know, just looking at his, you know, his Facebook, or not a favorite, his Twitter profile, you know, I think he's going to fit in with this organization. I mean, I don't say this in because of anything around it, but he did have, you know, he had it down that he was a Christian, which was one of those things, outgoing things, which is, you know, obviously a big thing in the clubhouse for the Cardinals. A lot of people in that regard. So I think he's going to fit in. Adam Wainwright tweeted how excited he was about the deal, which, you know, I think that seems like a guy that's going to fit in well in the clubhouse. Now we'll see how he does. We have seen that he has been more effective, and since he was recalled, you know, he had a little short stint in the minors. Some of that is some luck, though. I think when you look at the numbers, you know, what people are hitting against him. Now that the idea, you know, Jeff Passan that tweeted it out, that, you know, that should be better with the Cardinal defense behind him, and perhaps better, you know, more motivation playing in a different place. I mean, who knows? But hopefully it will work out. And you know, we remember the trade that Mo made, you know, just a couple years ago when he sent Zach Cox for Edward Mojica, the same type of deal here. Hopefully it's going to have similar results. But you're right. I think the biggest thing is to get another guy that can close games if necessary, because I think that's what we saw last night. You know, this is last night the Cardinals needed somebody to come in and get a close, to close the game, and, you know, two-run game, and Rosenthal goes back out there for his third night in a row. Now, part of that's because Rosenthal talked Matheny into letting him play, which is a whole nother story. But I think that Matheny would have been much more likely to resist that temptation had he had a guy like Cizik, also if Walden was available, guys that he could trust to pitch the ninth inning. You know, Sechrist wasn't available last night, so that really left Rosenthal. I mean, I was sitting there during the game going, who's going to pitch the ninth? Because I didn't think Rosenthal would. And I wasn't sure. I mean, Tuivalu was probably my first choice, although I'm still not 100% sure I want to throw him into that fire. But to have those guys armed. Now, the downside of this is to make room for Cizik, and I'm never going to say it right, so it doesn't matter, on the 40-man roster, they had to put Matt Belisle on the 60-day DL, which means Belisle's not coming back anytime soon. I don't know how long he's been out. But it's probably going to be.
I want to say late June, but I could be wrong.
Okay. Yeah, I think I looked it up not too long ago. It wasn't as far back as I thought. But we're talking, I mean, we're talking September for Bilal, basically.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, and that's too bad because we did see some really good stuff out of him. You know, and if he comes back in time to, you know, make it a statement and have a chance for that playoff roster, well and good. But, you know, maybe not, because we don't really know what's going on. And we got to hope that Walden returns. I mean, he pitched a scoreless inning in Springfield on Thursday. Supposed to pitch again tomorrow, I believe. Looking okay, but, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But if that's the case, if Walden comes back and he gets Cizik, that bullpen, that's
strong.
That's very strong stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you just get all these guys that have major league closing experience. So Matheny can basically, when it comes to the eighth and ninth inning, it's basically like going to a buffet bar. You just go, do I want a little high heat with Rosenthal? Do I want the sign armor with Cizik? Do I want, you know, a guy like Walden who hasn't closed in a while? And you got the young fireballer and Tuivalu. I mean, I just think it really strengthens a part of the team that really needs to be held in check in the last 2 months of the season. I mean, the Pirates aren't going away. I mean, I'm pretty sure they held on and beat the Nationals tonight 7-5. Mm-hmm. I know Mark Melanson will never give up another run again, because he hasn't since May 18th. He's a very stingy guy. Very stingy guy. But, yeah, I mean, I think this is a very win-win deal. I mean, you know, every trade, every time it happens, you have to step out and go, okay, win-lose, you know, what's the pros, what's the cons? I don't see a lot of cons with the Cizik thing. I mean, you spend a little bit of money, but you also get a guy like you said, and it's very similar to that Mojica Cox trade. You know, where you get a guy like him, and who like Cizik, he comes onto this team. I mean, he's gonna get innings. I mean, right away. because I don't think Mike Matheny wanted to give Tui Vilava all those high pressure innings so fast. I mean, I was surprised when I saw him out there in the eighth like four times in the last 2 weeks. I mean, and that's great because I love the kid, and I think that he's taken a huge step since last season when I saw him in September, you know, walking the Reds and giving up home runs. I mean, if I was Derek Lilliquist, I would have pulled Sam out of that game last year. But he's come a long way, but I don't think the team really wanted to throw him out there so fast, so hard. So, you know, Cishek just kind of gives you a little bit of flexibility. And it does push Belial back, but I think with the guy they picked up, I don't think they're going to miss Belial too much. And when it comes to, you know, late August, September, you're just going to get another bullpen guy back. So I think the Cardinals are just getting healthy. They got Matt Holliday back. They're getting Walden back. They got Cishek in a trade. They're going to get, you know, Jaime Garcia helped Peoria Chiefs throw a no-hitter last night. Now, I know it's a ball, but still, it just shows that he's healthy and he's thrown really well. I don't envision him getting another start. I mean, I watched Marco Gonzalez pitch in Little Rock on Wednesday and a couple of days ago, and while he looked good, he might get another start. But the Cardinals team is just really starting to get healthy. And if they've played 62-win ball, not fully equipped, I can only imagine what this team is going to do when they're fully equipped. When they have a big bullpen, they got seven guys in the rotation, they got a lineup that could even be getting beefed up, because I don't think Mozeliak's done. I mean, I don't think with the idea of trying Biscotti at first base, I don't think he's going to go out and make a monstrous blockbuster trade, but I think he's going to find a bat. This team just keeps getting healthy. That's going to be the biggest thing about this team, is getting healthy and just starting to, you know, click on all and every cylinder. And that is after winning 62 games with a patchwork roster.
Yeah, I mean, granted, they won some of those games before everybody started falling apart. So,
but the last bit, they have been able to move and hold their own with a weakened roster. I mean, the fact that,
yeah, they've got 62 wins after tonight's game. The closest competitor is Kansas City with 57. So it's going to be at least through this weekend before anybody else hits the 60 mark, and that's a pretty impressive thing. In fact, the Cardinals tonight have guaranteed they can, at the worst, they're going to go 62-100. So if they can win one, you know, tomorrow night, they won't lose 100 games. It's good to know. I mean, like they said, you've got 66 games left. You win 33 of those, and you're a 95-win team, and you're hosting somebody in the playoffs. Because I don't want to know. I mean, Pittsburgh would have to go be nuts to pass us.
Unbelievable, yeah.
Yeah, so you've got to feel a lot more confident than we did after watching that Pittsburgh series this team.
I mean, isn't that nuts how, you know, everybody was like climbing the ledge, and you know, it was the biggest thing people forgot was that it was the All-Star break, and that Pittsburgh momentum just kind of hit a halt, and they came out, and they lost, I think, 4 out of 5 to start the second half, and, you know, and they bounce right back down from 2.5 out to now they're 6 out. And they've actually won 2 nights in a row. So this is where the Cardinals are back to that comfortable lead where they're winning, and the Pirates are going to need a very big streak, or they're going to need to take care of the Cardinals when they face them in August. And that's just where the Cardinals want these teams to be. They want these teams to be kind of chasing them up a hill where it's just going to be harder and harder for them to catch them. And, you know, as we just mentioned, the Cardinals are getting healthy. So, you know, the Cubs and the Pirates kind of missed their opportunity. I mean, they had a chance here in late June and July to really pounce on the Cardinals. And in my opinion, even with what Pittsburgh did against the Cardinals, you know, they didn't sweep. They took 3 out of 4. The Cubs only split. They really blew a chance to catch the Cardinals in that week.
That was a big week. And they did it about the best as you could, because the Cubs could have easily won. You know, without Frost getting that late home run to win in 3 or 4 in there, too. I don't think you can expect. You know, you don't go into those series expecting this sweep of a team like St. Louis. And the Cardinals didn't go in expecting this sweep of the other team. I mean, they were going to be happy with the split as well. So, that may have been, you know, their last start. You don't expect Pittsburgh to go into Milwaukee and get swept. I mean, that's just
was
surprising. While the Cardinals are, you know, winning 2 of 3 against the Mets, felt like,
but
two,
they were
2 of 4 given that extra inning game. But so that you know, you gain some room there.
They were so mad though that they went out and acquired Aramis Ramirez after they got swept, because they were so mad.
And that's, I mean, that's a big thing. I mean, they were looking for somebody that's better than Pedro Alvarez, which if you put And it's been a long time since we've had to deal with this, but you put Aramis Ramirez and Pedro Alvarez in a lineup against the Cardinals, that's just dangerous. Danger waiting to happen. I mean, those two guys destroyed the Cardinals. and there's still 9 games left. I'm sure that that's a little bit of what they were thinking about. You know, we talked last, what was it, I think it was the last show, we talked a lot about.
The last 2 shows.
Yeah, about Aramis Ramirez coming to St. Louis, and given what the Pirates had to give up, which was kind of what the Cardinals gave up here to get Cishek. I mean, a double A, a prospect there might have been a little bit better than the one the Cardinals gave up, but it wasn't much. I'm a little surprised that Mo wasn't in on that, and maybe he was, and maybe the price was cheaper for Pittsburgh than it was for the St. Louis, but I'm a little surprised that he didn't get in on that.
Yeah, I mean, when I heard about it, I was like, man, that's not a lot. And yes, you know, the Pirates are taking on some salary. Are the Brewers paying any of that, the rest of Ramirez's salary, or are the Pirates doing it?
I think I remember seeing that the Brewers sent some money to the Pirates. So they may be paying some of that.
Well, I mean, in my opinion, I think the price may have been different. I always want to go. I mean, I think when teams deal with the Cardinals, they might jack up their price a little bit. But I don't know. Maybe it was a matter of just the Pirates making that call first. I mean, maybe Mazzell, because it's really kind of. I almost picture a guy who, you know, let's just say, like, you know, a movie theater opens in the morning and everybody rushes to the front window. Well, John's the guy that sits in his car and lets the big bunch of people go up there first and get their tickets. He's going to be the first. He's going to be the, you know, he'll come in the second wave. And sometimes you do miss these kind of deals, you know, like Ramirez. Maybe he was thinking more about pitching. Maybe he was really kind of teeing up the Cishek deal. Maybe he was doing that before he really assesses what he needs on offense. Maybe the Cardinals just didn't want Aramis Ramirez. Maybe they didn't want to move Matt Carpenter to first base, even though I don't think what the cost was as far as taking on the money. It wouldn't have been that much. But it does make it an interesting feel. But these are all interdivision deals, you know, with the Ramirez going from the Brewers to the Pirates. Now, I'm not sure the Brewers are just going to ready to tee up Adam Lind to the Cardinals, but it makes you think that, like, that kind of deal is not completely out of the spectrum of possibility. With this kind of deal, kind of makes you think that the Cardinals might be talking to Milwaukee about Adam Lind. Well, what do you think?
You know, it's possible. You never really know. By the way, but to finalize that, the Pirates are taking on about a little bit more than half of what's left. Aramis Ramirez is owed about 5.75, okay, and they're going to pay $3 million, which means the Brewers are paying 2.75. That must be what the money they sent along.
Gotcha.
So they are, you know, they did save some money, which, I mean, obviously, there's no reason for the Brewers really to hand him over for, especially for if you're not saving some money. I mean, come on, you got to at least get something out of the deal. So,
I mean, the Brewers are like, okay, we just swept you. We feel bad for impeding your momentum. So here's an aging, retiring third baseman with some pop. Yeah. And like you, I mean, when I wrote the list of first base opportunities, I mean, my ear was kind of piked by the idea of Aramis Ramirez coming back here and finishing off his career. You know, now that he's in Pittsburgh, he isn't going to have any chance to win the World Series. It's just not going to happen. I'm sorry, Pittsburgh. But I instantly kind of thought of, you know, Larry Walker, Will Clark coming here and just kind of catching fire. But, you know, I wasn't too mad about it. I mean, I think the Pirates have a really big need with Josh Harrison and Jordy Mercer out. So they probably made that call and said, hey, you know, we got this guy. You want to make that deal? I mean, we'll pay this money. I think they probably just beat Mo to it. But then again, we have no idea. It's like talking in the blind. If we asked Mo about it now, he would just smirk at us and walk away.
Yeah, probably. He might say if there was interest. He wouldn't say how interested or how close they got. Or,
well, you know, but, Dan, you know, we were maybe.
Yeah,
you know,
but
you never know.
Yeah. So anyway, it's an interesting situation. And it very well may be the Cardinals are trying to figure out what to do with Stephen Piscotty, which – you know, that may play into things eventually.
Yeah.
Now, we've seen Piscotty get called up. He got called up before the White Sox series as the Cardinals, you know, made a few moves in that regard. You know, got to see him a couple of – he played outfield in Chicago, came back to St. Louis, was supposed to play last night, got a stiff neck, couldn't play last night. Looked okay tonight when he pinch hit, but didn't stay in the game to play first.
Yeah.
it's becoming difficult, I think, for Mo to know what he's got in Scotty. Which, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, he was coming up with like 10 games between his thing and the trading deadline. You weren't gonna get a real good feel for it anyway. But I think you gotta have some idea what he can do at first before you go in and bring somebody else back, don't you?
Yeah, and this is to paraphrase, I think Kevin Reynolds gets the award for telling Piscotty to kind of man up and get out there and play last night. I think he had a tweet that said, you know, come on, stiff neck, get out there and play. It was a great tweet from Kevin Reynolds, who's a very – you need to follow him on at Deck of Cards on Twitter. He's a very good follow. He shoots it straight. He even kind of straightens me out sometimes when I go off the wire, which is basically every other day. Mm-hmm. Because and I blame the Cardinals. But when it comes to Piscotty, I mean, I thought when they called him up, I thought immediately, okay, they're going to play this guy this 10 or 11 days straight. They're going to see what they have. I mean, they have all these games at home against the Braves and the Reds. Maybe Mo's hoping he just comes up here and hits a bunch and maybe gives him a reason not to have to make a deal like for Lind. Maybe he makes a deal for a smaller bat. But, you know, I just don't see it happening. And I think maybe the injury just kind of tells you, okay, I don't think you're going to get a good assessment of what Piscotty can do. It's not really fair the kid to go, okay, you need to come up here and hit like Matt Holly did in 2009, so we want to make a big trade. Okay, kid, no pressure, just get out there and play. I think that's a little bit too much to ask. I mean, I'm glad to see him here, and I do want to see him play. Hopefully he'll start tomorrow if he pinch it tonight, and that feels fine. Because I think the only way to really find out, you got to play him every day, get him four bats, get him at first, get him in left field. I mean, let him kind of get comfortable. Everybody's worried about first base. I mean, if the kid, if he's played the infield at all in his career, and as long as he can catch and lead the pitcher to first base, I'm not really worried about what he can do at first base. Everybody wants to know, can he hit? And, you know, we saw a little bit of that in Chicago. We didn't see a lot. He had kind of a scratch single for his first major league hit. He had a double. And, you know, I'm really glad to see him. I think he's earned the shot to be here. I think that he could be a complimentary piece, but I don't think anybody's asked him to save the day.
Yeah, I mean, we were asked on Twitter tonight, one of the questions that we asked people to contribute, and one of them was the expectations for Piscotty, and I think that's right. I think that we're not going to see him win a Gold Glove if he doesn't drop balls, and that's going to be I think the biggest thing is going to be trying to figure out if he can pick stuff in the dirt from Wong or from Peralta or something of that nature. And not that they throw it in the dirt very often, but there are times where we've seen Mark Reynolds be able to do that, dig it out, and that's going to be kind of a big thing. But you know, if he can, you know, be reasonable around the plate, around the base, and then hit, I think, yeah, if he hits 250, 260, I think we're pretty happy to get a little bit of pop here there. We've already seen him hit a double. You know, he's going to have to apparently work on his base running a little bit, because we saw him not go from first to third on a ball tonight that I think a lot of us expected him to do. But we're still kind of iffy there. But I don't think it, like you said, I don't think anybody's expecting him to be this savior guy. I really don't think the expectations are nearly as high on him as they were on Tavares last year. I mean, I think everybody kind of thought Tavares was going to come in and be
Yasiel Puig and just hit like, you know, a 15 home run, drive in 40, do backflips onto the infield and do everything right. Yeah, I don't see that pressure with Piscotty, but I do think that with first base kind of being so open, that I think people kind of wanted to see him do well. And I think the big homestand is timed perfectly. I think the stiff neck was just kind of unfortunate. Hopefully he knocks that off and he can come up tomorrow and, you know, finish his series off. And of course, you know, tomorrow is facing Mr. Shelley Miller, our old friend on the mound. So hopefully we saw AJ Pruszynski bat in the ninth inning tonight. So it was kind of, it's one of those things where the past and the present are all kind of merging. And I think it's nice to see Piscotty up here. But while at first I thought, oh man, this kid might come up here and he might just, you know, blow the barn off the door and hit everything. I think that he can play a role. And I think that he can kind of keep guys like Reynolds and Carpenter sharp. But I also think that he's going to be more of a complimentary piece. I think Mo's going to still be looking for a bat. What kind of bat? I have no idea. Because, I mean, there's so many possibilities out there. You know, you have the Ben Zobrist, you know, versatile type out in Oakland. You have Yonder Alonso. You have Adam Lind. You have all these guys, you know. And, of course, like Tara Willman said last week, you never know what Mo's thinking, because he's probably not thinking what everybody else is thinking.
Yeah, I mean, we've never been real great about guessing no. guessing what Mo's going to do necessarily. So yeah, there's some of that. I you know, I feel like Ben Zobrist as a name that would he'd be great, but I just think that too many people want him. I don't see that Mo paying those prices.
Yeah.
And so yeah, trying to figure out who else now. You got to wonder. I have to wonder. No, I guess not everybody else does. But I see what Tim Cooney has done, and you know he pitches tonight. He pitches into the seventh.
Pitched very well. I think did he throw like? I mean, he threw 74 pitches through seven.
Something like that. It was pretty amazing. It was 65 through six. I remember. And then if Mark Reynolds had not hit into a double play, he probably wouldn't have come out for the seventh just because of the way the batting order went. But he did come out for the seventh, and he had just one little hiccup, but he really pitched well, and I'm wondering, you know, he's pitched pretty well over the last few innings. In fact, as much as it pains me to say it, he's obviously passed Tyler Lyons on the depth chart, if you will. But you do wonder if other teams are looking at that as well. Cooney is a guy that he could be very helpful for other teams. I don't know how much he helps the Cardinals. You know, obviously Jaime Garcia looks like he's ready to come back and take that spot. He started that, like you said, he started that no-hitter night before last. There was never an issue with stuff with Jaime Garcia. It was just whether his leg was up. He's obviously healthy. I don't see that there's any reason to keep him down in the minors, like you say, so he could be back up, and Cooney has no spot. And this is not even a situation where Cooney's going to have a real good shot at a rotation spot next year. I mean, you look at, you know, Wainwright, Lynn, Walker, Martinez, right there. Then you've got, you know, what do you do with Garcia? Do you let Carl Gonzalez have that spot? Do you re-sign John Lackey? You know,
so many opportunities,
many spots. And so it would seem to me that Tim Cooney is a really good trade chip, or he's built himself into that. You know, I don't know if other teams look at it that way, but it feels like to me he could be one that's on the move. And make that move maybe before that next start, before Jaime comes back up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I think that since everybody watches the Cardinals every night, they are watching this kid. And I think for me, it's when he made that start on the road in Chicago, and he made that start on Sunday against Francisco Liriano, and he held his own. That's where he really proved to me that he's got the stuff. I mean, you go on the road in a very hostile rivalry, you know, like environment in Wrigley Field and PNC Park, and you hold your own, you pitch well, and you match a guy who really cuts the Cardinals down, Liriano. I mean, you show me something. And tonight, I mean, we all know the kid's gotten better, but when you go out and throw 70 plus pitches in seven innings, I mean, you know, Lance Lynn's mouth's watering when you're watching you pitch those with the like that. I mean, that's just a, you know, economical pitching right there that the Cardinals just don't see every night. I mean, they see a lot of their pitchers pitch very well, but not that just precise. And, you know, when he goes out there night against the Braves, you know, who can hit? I mean, they're not like, you know, the Baltimore Orioles, but I mean, but they can hit. And you see, you know, Tim Cooney pitched that well. You know this guy's got some good stuff, and he's just gotten better and better with each start. And teams that are looking at the Cardinals, knowing that they need first base help, knowing they need offensive pop, they are going to be thinking, okay, that'd be the first guy they're going to ask for. Because I'm pretty sure they know if they ask Mo about Mr. Carlos Martinez, the answer is a flat no. Steve Biscotti's probably at least a half no, but when it comes to Tim Cooney, I'm with you. I think Mo has to be realistic and go, okay, I mean, does this guy have a spot in August and September? Does he have a spot in 2016? Are you gonna miss the opportunity of having him as trade bait when he's pitched this good? I mean, right now is when he's pitched his best start. I mean, he pitched his best start right before the trade deadline. So, you mean, I can almost envision a trade where Tim Cooney does go out just because he's the hottest guy as far as pitching trade chip. He is the hottest item on Mo's list right now. So I can definitely see that. And one thing I do want to bring up that I think Bernie Miklos wrote about and really nailed in the head was that I don't think Mo should really think too hard about Matt Adams next year and blocking him. If people haven't read it yet, Bernie Miklos wrote about an article about something that I haven't even looked at. I'm kind of switching gears here, so bear with me. But he wrote an article about Matt Adams and how his power has really dropped since last the All-Star break. And that I didn't realize this as far as not wanting to block Matt Adams and how Mo shouldn't think that way when he's looking for a trade guy. And I agree with that. to switch gears, I mean, what is your take on Bernie's article? Do you think that Mozeliak should worry about blocking Adams, or should he just go get a guy that can play first base this year or next year?
Boy, it's tough. I mean, because I think I still, you know, I know I'm maybe higher than on Matt Adams and a lot of people, and I don't have necessarily any particular reason to be, but
well, there's plenty of reasons.
You know, I feel like, you know, I think we've seen some flashes where he can do better than we've had. I think he can hit lefties better than he has. He's obviously got the power. I mean, power that this team has typically not had much of. Now, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about Randall Grichuk here in a while, and that may help in that regard. But we'll get to that in a minute. So, if given the choice, I would prefer not to block Matt Adams.
I gotcha.
That being said, if you can get a quality guy, a guy that's established, a guy that maybe is not, I mean, if you could get a guy like Jason Hayward playing first base, I don't know who that guy would be. I'm just saying, if there's a young guy, you know, kind of a veteran guy, you can have him for a couple of years, but he's been proven, you know, and if you could get him for the right price, yeah, I think you go ahead and pull that trigger and you worry about Matt Adams later. You worry about him being, you know, if they split time, do they go off the bench? Do you trade him in the offseason? You know, something.
Yeah,
but
I
think your first choice is to get a guy that's going to be gone at the end of the year, but you don't rule out getting something else.
I think, and the reason I kind of cut in there with Matt Adams being blocked is that, you know, when you talk about Tim Cooney being tradable, he's going to obviously be traded for a guy that could probably play first base. And I do agree with you that Tim Cooney's trade value is just growing and growing. And I do see that. And I also see a guy like Matt Adams who, you know, he's had a couple of productive years, so I don't think he's going to really whine about having to share first base. I think he's a guy that's kind of starting to grow into the position and still figuring out what he is. But I do think Mo should think about, you know, helping this team this year, but not necessarily blocking out next year. I mean, if he's got a guy that can possibly play next year. I mean, Adam Lind is a interesting case because he's a very much older player, and he's been around for a while. He's having a great year in Milwaukee. He's got an option year for next year, but he's basically an older, kind of the same specimen, if not more productive, than Matt Adams. So that's kind of an interesting case. And as far as the other first base options, I mean, I don't see a ton out there. Like when I think about getting a Jason Hayward type aged player at first base, I don't see it out there. But also there's the third base opportunity where you can move Matt Carpenter to first base and he can, you know, get a lot of time there. You can find a third baseman. My dream person is Adrian Beltre. For any reason, he'd actually leave Texas. There is none. But if Mozeliak can pull that off, I keep thinking about that for third baseman. But I'm kind of in the middle. I mean, I like Matt Adams, but I also realize that when it comes to what he's done since last year, and he's had this just dramatic drop off in power from last year's All-Star break, and maybe it's just, you know, growing pains. We've seen it with guys like Randall Grichuk, who just kind of took some time to develop. They've had ups and downs, but Matt Adams getting hurt really threw a wrench into plans as far as this season, as far as next season, because you can't really, he doesn't have trade value, and you kind of are stuck with seeing what he can do next year, which might not be that bad of an idea. So as far as where Mo's going to go, I mean, I think that he should keep his options open, but I still think if I'm Mo, if I'm thinking the way he's thinking, I'm thinking he's just won't need a stopgap for this year, a guy that can just play this year and that will not interfere or maybe trades, maybe hug a little bit of time at first base, but I don't think Mo's thinking a long-term option trade because I don't think there's a guy out there, a realistic option. I mean, we talked about Mr. Troy Tulowitzki, and that would require kind of a shuffle of the infield. And knowing Mo, he could be thinking about a guy like that. And as we just said 5 minutes ago, Mo could be thinking about something that we're not even thinking about. He might be going, well, they must have stopped thinking about that Tulo guy. Let me call Colorado. Just because that's Mo, because Mo would just do that because he can, because he's got their cell phone number and Cardinal fans don't. Thank gosh.
Yeah.
but I mean, when it comes to first base, I do think Mo is thinking short term, but maybe he's not even thinking first base. Maybe he's thinking third base, shifting guys around. I mean, when it comes to Mo, anything's possible, and that makes this next week so interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of looking over, you know, first base. I ran down the list, and there's nobody interesting there. save for
realistic.
Yeah, I mean, it's realistic. I mean, you're looking at a guy, you don't think the Reds would trade Joey Votto, but even if they did, the Cardinals wouldn't be in that. That's too expensive. That's too much to go there. And I don't think the Reds are gonna move him. Kind of just pulling up third base, and I'm not necessarily seeing anything. Although, wouldn't it be nice to have Nolan Arredondo?
Or maybe call Walt and go, hey, Walt, can we have a Mr. Frazier before you get fired?
Yeah. I sending Frazier to St. Louis, we get Walt fired, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Before you get that pink slip by your career, can you send us Mr. Frazier? He was pretty good that All-Star game. Can we have him?
Yeah. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, you do look at that. There's just nobody that stands out. Again, maybe there's some people that are available that we don't know about or available at the right deal that Mo could put together, but it seems like this is a stopgap thing, and you like we've kind of said, and you just kind of work on it. Maybe you work on something bigger in the off season, and then you shift Matt Adams. I don't know, but right now, I don't think you'd mess with it.
Yeah, and like I mentioned a couple weeks ago, there's a guy like Yonder Alonso. The Padres want to get rid of him. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that's not too long-term. He's a young guy. But he's only got a 1-year contract. He hits lefties. That's something that Mark Reynolds and the other first baseman don't. I mean, he can kind of fit in and be that guy that doesn't have to play every day on this team. And he can kind of be a help. He can be a guy off the bench. He can play some first base. He can start against tough lefties. He only cost the Padres $1.65 million. And like you said, he's still controllable. So that might drive his price up. But, you know, there's a guy that Mo might go, okay, I can dish the Padres are, the Padres will probably love a left-hand starter like Tim Cooney or even Tyler Lyons or just somebody to stuff in the rotation, some kind of, double-A prospect. I mean, in order to give a guy like that off, maybe that's where he goes, a guy who's kind of young, doesn't really have a lot of pop, but he gets on base a lot, he hits lefties. That kind of move is the kind of move that I kind of keep coming back to just because it's not explosive, but it's something that Mo would do.
It's possible, but I think, and maybe it's wrong of us, but we do tend to look and hope that whoever Mo brings in has some pop, and, Alonso, that's not Alonzo's strong suit. I mean,
not at all.
Other offensive attributes, but, and that could help too. This team seems to be a team that can't always get that hit when they need to. We saw that tonight. They stranded, I think, 7 runners in the last 3 innings.
But also you get a guy like Mr. Grichuk who's kind of got a little more lightning in his bat these last couple weeks.
Yeah, and there's somebody. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Grichuk. I've got to say I've been impressed with him. There's no doubt. My dad last year in the fall, but while the season was still going on in September, so he came in. He said, "Yeah, I think that Grichuk's a big. He's going to be a ball player." And I said, "Okay," and I thought. because I mean, I'd read the stuff. I'd read that he, kind of his idea, the limit that people thought he was going to be. It looked like a lot of people thought he was going to be a fourth outfielder, a guy that would strike out a lot. If he ran into one, he'd hit it out. But he seems to have developed his game this year. Now, I'm still not 100% sure we're not seeing the best year that Randall Grichuk is going to have. But he is still young enough to develop. I think that he has shown some adjustments. He still strikes out a good bit, but he's walked a little bit more than I think we thought.
Yeah, yes, he's walked a little more.
The Fox guys today said that right now he's the most exciting player on the team. Would you agree with that?
I wrote a column today for STL Sportsman about what I just basically called the Randall Grichuk show. I think the guy is growing into a one-man army. Just as far as really nailing down a spot in center field. Now, understand that I'm like you. Last year, I was kind of a Randall Grichuk, not really a critic or a fan. I was right in the middle. I thought he was an intriguing guy who had some pop, but he struck out a lot. I wasn't sure if you can really, it was a big amount where it really kind of alerts you to, can this guy get, 500 bats and not strike out, 200 times. But, he's a guy that's really taken some big steps. And I wrote today about, just what he's doing. I mean, he's got 11 home runs now. He's got, 34 RBIs. I mean, the guy, and his average is good, too. And he's actually got a respectable on-base percentage. His slugging percentage is, around 560. It's ridiculous. And he sustained it. I think by now people thought maybe he would have dropped off. He'd be hitting 240. He just wouldn't have the power. He wouldn't be able to adjust. And in his second season in the majors, he's really kind of taken the center field spot. I mean, I said center field is kind of belongs to Randall Grichuk right now. It doesn't matter if John Jay was the John Jay of the past or if Peter Borges was hitting a little better. I think the team is interested in this kid. And we all know that Mozeliak, when it comes to that freeze Borges trade, this guy was the secret piece. This guy was the, you know, if John Mozeliak was ordering Chinese food, Randall Grichuk is basically the crab rangoon. I mean, he is the masterpiece of the dish. Without him, that trade doesn't happen. David Freeze is probably still a Cardinal, which is interesting right now because of what Freeze is doing out in LA. But I am becoming a Randall Grichuk believer just because of what he can do in the field. He's a very able outfielder. He can play all three spots, and what he's doing in for the lineup that lacks power. Except for Johnny Peralta, who's put up a nice year offensively. You've had the power outage of Matt Holliday. You know, Carpenter up until that home run last night was kind of having a tough time. You need a guy who can hit that big two-run homer like tonight and just jumpstart the whole offense, and he's done that. And, you know, he's done it against some pretty good pitchers, and he's done it against some pretty good teams. And every time you think this guy's going to drop off, I mean, there's one guy – who I've talked to, and I won't name him. I think people will know him on Twitter. He says, well, he's had a handful of good games. Like, no, I think we're getting past the point where Grichuk's had a lot more than a handful of good games. I think he's had a lot of good games. He's had a very good July, and he's really just kind of becoming that stable piece in center field. I mean, we all know Matt Holliday's in left. We all know the Cardinals and their fans and the front office want Hayward to be that guy in right, the way that his season's coming into shape. But center field has kind of been an open spot until this Randall Grichuk show. I mean, I compare him to a movie. You know, he's like an 80s action film. You know, he strikes out, he hits a home run, he hits a double. He's got, I think, extra base hits. I think he's almost got, he's got 17 doubles and 6 triples and like 11 home runs. Yeah. I mean, that's just a crazy split for a guy in his second year to have. He's a very exciting player. And I think it's become more of a reality than a dream.
Yeah, I mean, you feel like by now the book would be out on Grichuk.
People
would know how to get him. And it does seem like he's doing more than anybody else for the most part, except for Peralta. You know, you look at him, he's got the highest slugging percentage on the team. You know, he's almost 70 points ahead of Peralta there, even though Peralta has, now he's got fewer at bats, and that's a big chunk of it too, but
yeah.
You know, he's within striking distance of Peralta in just about every of those extra base hit categories, even though he's got 150 at bats less than Peralta does. So you kind of feel like, yeah, you know, I think if this was a video game, he might be one of those guys that you put out on the trade block and see what kind of interest you draw. Because again, I can't shake the feeling that we're seeing maybe the best that we're going to see out of Randall Grichuk. But, I don't know that you want to bet on that. I mean, there's no doubt at his age and his, you know, he is a guy that, you know, even though it was a technicality, was drafted ahead of Mike Trout, you know, by the Angels.
Yes, I mean, he was. You know,
again, technicality, they knew they had two picks in a row and they just took Grichuk first. But, you know, he's a guy that was a first round talent and there's a reason for that. So, I don't know. I do like what he brings because he does seem to bring that a little bit more excitement to this team than we have seen.
Yeah.
In a while. I guess maybe it's the speed, it's the ability to know that he could hit the ball out of the ballpark because
it's also the youth. I mean, I think it's just the fact that this team kind of needs excitement. I mean, they have a lot of great guys in Wainwright and Yachty and Holliday, but you know, it's nice to have that young player again. The Cardinals haven't had a really, really exciting young player. They grew themselves a young guy that they got, you know, since Pujols left, we haven't had that big, exciting young player or a big home run threat. I mean, yes, Holliday has found a way to hit 20, and Peralta's having a good year. But, you know, this guy, if he keeps going the way he is, I mean, we could have a 30-home run guy. I mean, I'm not sure what his average is going to be. I'm not sure what his RBIs would be. But this guy, he's got that ability to go on kind of a tangent and just hit a bunch of home runs. And I think that excites people. And I think the Cardinals, I mean, fans know that the Cardinals are a great team. They're going to win. When you got a guy like Grichuk who's just, he appeals, I said in my article, he appeals to every age group. You know, the kids, he's this big, you know, strapping, you know, big hitter who's hitting the ball a long way to teenagers. He's a guy who's only like 5 years older than you. As far as if you're high schooler, I mean, you're looking at a guy who's 23 years old and he's smacking balls all over the field. He's making some big plays. And, you know, to adults, you know, I know when he bats, my wife has to watch him hit. Now, that's because he's also not bad looking, but he's also just an exciting talent. I mean, you kind of want to see what he's going to do. He's either going to miss huge or he's going to hit it a long way. I mean, both home runs the last two nights I thought were flyouts. And he just kind of just cranks them off the end of the bat, or he just has that quick bat and he yanks it into the left field stands. He's a very exciting player. And for a team that plays a lot of close games, they win. But, you know, maybe they lacked a little bit of excitement. Now, you know, Trevor Rosenthal gives you a different kind of excitement, a very heart-wrenching excitement, blood pressure-induced. But, you know, Grichuk's kind of like an action film. Like I said, he's kind of like, it's kind of like a cheeseburger delight. You know, you kind of know what it is, but it's always enjoyment when you have it. It's expected, but it's also exhilarating. And I mean, every time I think of Grichuk, I think of him as an experience. I think the more times I watch him, the more I'm kind of wanting to sit down. I mean, this is a guy who's, you know, you're doing laundry, you're making dinner. When he comes up to bat, you kind of want to stop doing it. You kind of want to see what he's going to do. Now, I may, you know, the pitcher, if he knows what's good for him, will just throw, you know, three sliders or curveballs away and hopefully Grichuk chases. But if you lead one over to plate, Grichuk's going to hit it a long way. To a lesser extent, with the way it is with Carlos Martinez, you go, man, this guy's ours, and he's young, and he's controllable, and, you know, other teams are not going to like facing this guy, because they know that they can get him out with this pitch. But if they make one mistake and that pitch catches too much of the plate, he's going to hit it out, and his age means that all he's going to do is just get better. I mean, I still don't think that Ranger Grichuk has really become the player that he could possibly be. And we've seen him walk a little bit more, and we've seen him be a little bit more plate discipline, not much. But he's also a guy that's really grown in stature in the last 2 months.
You know, we talk about Grichuk being, you know, the next young hope. And I think part of what's fun about Grichuk is he doesn't seem to hit too many ground balls to second base or the shortstop.
I mean, he does not.
You know, strike out, fly out, hit the ball hard. I mean, it doesn't seem like we're getting a lot of ground outs.
Maybe go big, go home, basically.
Like it.
Go ahead.
But we look at him and he's what, 23, 24. He'll be 24 here next month. Then you got a guy like Jason Hayward, who's just going to be 26 next month. I mean, they're almost exactly 2 years difference there.
Yeah.
Hayward is still young, and I think he continues. He doesn't have I say flashiness, because Grichuk seems to have a little bit of a flash to him. And I don't say that in a negative connotation at all. I mean, that's just what it is. But Hayward's pretty solid, and he has really been getting the job done as well. I know we're going to talk a lot this weekend, or hear a lot this weekend, about that trade, because Shelby
Miller, yes, we are.
He pitches against Carlos Martinez tomorrow night. Hayward's playing against the Braves. We're going to hear about that. But, you know, I think it's really gotten to the point where it's hard to imagine Hayward not being in a Cardinal uniform for another few years.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's been the most consistent player, and that's not a smack to Johnny Peralta. He's been a guy that's really been hitting well since May 1st. He's a guy who had a horrible April. He didn't hit well. He kind of had the new team jitters, but he's been really hitting well in May and June, and he had a really good July. A lot of Cardinals, like even Colton Wong and Matt Carpenter, they had rough Julys. Matt Holliday wasn't really around for most of this month. But, you know, Jason Hayward has been a stabilizing presence, you know, and I'll reference Bernie Miklos again. If you guys haven't really caught on, I'm a big Bernie Miklos fan. He's the guy that I've read since I was a kid. But even he recognized that even he's starting to understand this big widespread appeal of Hayward, that it extends beyond home runs. I mean, Hayward's pretty much showed himself in his five seasons to not be a guy that's going to hit more than 20 or 22 home runs. He's a guy that gives you, I mean, here he is. He steals his 15th base, and he stole one last night. He steals one tonight. He's got 15 in stolen bases in 17 attempts. He's a guy that's very good at it. He's not afraid to try. He gives you a guy that's going to go first to third. He's going to stretch a double into a triple. He's going to give you that gold glove defense. He's hitting for average. He's got his average up into the 280s. I know he at least had a hit tonight. I only got chance to see part of the game tonight, but he's a guy that's been very consistent since May 1st, and he's a guy that he's only 25. He's still a young player. I mean, you could possibly have a very if Holiday does get superseded by Piscotty eventually in left, you get a very young outfield. Or you at least have a guy in center field who's going to be 24. Hayward's 25. You know, Holiday's kind of the anchor in left who still does a lot of things well. But Hayward's starting to show all the naysayers what he can do. And I think that it goes beyond home runs and RBIs, and it goes into all aspects of his game. The Cardinals haven't had an arm like that in right field. They haven't had that range. I mean, Carlos Beltran had a decent arm, but Hayward's got the range. Runners don't run on him at all. He's a guy that's got a great defensive, prowess to him. He's kind of a guy you want to watch out there. I mean, the guy that's, if there's an opposing base runner on second base and Hayward gets the ball, ground ball to right field, a base hit, you're going to go, here we go. Is he going to fire a strike to home plate? I mean, there's an excitement to that. And there's also an aspect that maybe he's still evolving as a hitter. He's only, a year and a half older than Grichuk, maybe, some change. But he's still evolving as a hitter. And while it may not include 25, 30 home runs, it's going to involve a guy that can hit anywhere in the lineup and who's just getting more comfortable in his new team. And as I said, since November, it's going to come down to him choosing where he wants to play. The Cardinals are going to offer him a decent deal if they do. And it's going to come down to him probably taking less money to play in St. Louis. I mean, it's going to be less money to play here no matter what, because other teams are going to offer him a very rich contract, and the Cardinals would probably be good to kind of start talking to him about that. And he's a guy that I've believed in ever since he's been here. I've always wanted him to do well. I think that he's the kind of player the Cardinals need to build around. You know, without a guy like when Pujols left, I mean, and with Holiday and Molina kind of getting up there, I mean, they're not useless yet, of course, but they're getting up there in age. And you have a guy in Hayward and a guy named in Grichuk and even Martinez and Waka, the young fleet that you want to start believing in and investing in. And I think Hayward is going to lead that charge.
Yeah, I feel like the only downside to Hayward right now is, like you said, he's more than home runs, but he hasn't hit one in a month. His last one was June 24th against Miami. And I know that, like I said, it's not that he hasn't been productive in that time span, and we would like to see a little bit more. It's not vital or necessary, but you know, he isn't a single. We don't want him to be a single hitter. Now, obviously, he's stealing bases, which I like to see. He runs well. He obviously plays great defense, and he is hitting. He's in the 280s now, so he's obviously very productive. But I think if he's going to get the contract that he wants, he's going to have to see a little bit more power. Now, you know, he could still wind up at the year at 15 home runs, be a 15-15 guy because he's got about 15 steals now, and that's not bad. I think that's, we would definitely take that. I mean, what have we gotten is such a step up from last year that I don't, you know, seem silly to complain at all, but, I'm hopeful that maybe, you know, again, the Cardinals can sign him and he can really develop, fully into a Cardinal uniform and, you know, get relaxed. Have some good years in front of him. We will have to see. I feel like nothing in that out of this situation has been so miserable that he wouldn't want to come back. From what I haven't heard anything of that nature. I think the Cardinals would like to have him back, but I don't figure Mo's going to talk to him too much this week about a contract extension. Mo may have a few other things on his mind, so maybe into August. And I wouldn't be surprised if they set some groundwork for an extension. But it may be one of those things that doesn't get, if he does sign before he goes to free agency, which is probably pretty unlikely, then it'd be like right after in the playoffs, you know, after the playoffs are over, before he actually puts that pen to paper, either that or maybe at the end of September, if the Cardinals get it clinched, maybe they finalize some business.
I think he can do a lot of good by hitting a 500-foot home run off Shelly Miller tomorrow night, just to really get every other fan that doesn't like the deal into his boat. You know, that might buy him a whole week of 0-for-4s, but if he can just hit a home run tomorrow night, I think we'll all be good.
It would probably break some things on Twitter or other situations. It would be kind of wild. I think that matchup tomorrow night, and we're kind of going a little bit astray, but who cares? That matchup tomorrow night is so intriguing. You've got Shelby Miller, the guy they did trade away, versus Carlos Martinez, the guy they kept. I mean, that was the decision that Mo really had to make
he did, yes.
That's who people were asking for, one or the other.
Yeah, I mean, Carlos Martinez was the guy that every team, I think when Mo talked to Colorado about Tulo, I think they wanted Carlos, and he said no. And I think when the Braves talked to him about, You know, they wanted Carlos too, and we all know why other teams wanted Carlos. I mean, look what he's doing. He's a guy who's blossomed into a top of the rotation starter in less than half a season. He's basically aged about 5 to 10 years in starter years in front of us, and it's a great matchup, and it has to happen. I think this is basically the Hollywood, the cinematic aspect of the world coming into play, putting these two against each other. Shelly Miller, who's coming into his own as a starter in Atlanta. You know, Atlanta gave up Jason Hayward, a guy that they probably kind of signed, a guy that came up in their system. So, I mean, they traded Hayward for this guy, and knowing that he had the idea and the ability to be a number one or number two, but Shelly Miller has basically really held up well, and he's pitched well. But the Cardinals, we all know the Cardinals hitters know him, and we know that tomorrow is going to be a very intriguing aspect just because we have the guy that the Cardinals decided to keep against the guy that if they cut loose. And the Cardinals could do very well just to have Carlos pitch a gem and Jason Hayward to go 4-for-4.
It would be the Cardinals would not argue with that very much. I don't think
they would not.
I'm interested because we have seen what Carlos can do, like you say, and it's been so much more than some of us. I think a lot of people thought that he could be this. I think some of us were a little bit more hesitant. It's so great to see. And you look and you see his personality. I think he's going to be a fan favorite for quite some time.
I think he is too. And I think what he's doing, I think he's kind of replacing the Joe Kelly Joker, optimistic, kind of very exuberant guy. I think fans really hate losing Joe Kelly just because of how loose he was in the clubhouse, and Cardinal players loved him for that. But I think Carlos Martinez has kind of replaced that a little bit. I think he's kind of been that younger burst of energy. I mean, you have a very young kid here that's ability to walk out that mound and turn into a 36-year-old kind of very grizzled John Lackey-like personality. And then he goes in the dugout and he turns into this kid again. And I think for a team that's anchored by some veterans, and they have their young guys, but they have veterans in this team that probably need guys like Carlos to kind of keep them a little bit more level-headed, but also guys that can go out in that field and really become just like a bulldog. I mean, it's crazy the way that Carlos goes out there and he becomes this completely different person. I mean, he's very relaxed, but he's just very serious. He's not smiling. I mean, whenever somebody hits a home run now, Carlos is now the decorated Gatorade guy. He has to have Gatorades for, if it's a grand slam, he has to have 4 cups, basically. So that's kind of his non-starting day's job. But he's also a guy that I think he's become everything the Cardinals fans and the team want him to be. He's blossoming into a great young man and a great young pitcher and a guy that the Cardinals can build a rotation around in the future. And I think that's why everybody feels good going into tomorrow's game. And yes, they have a guy in Shelly Miller who's turned into a top of the rotation guy and could very well just get better and better, but he was expendable because of the promise and the talent of a guy like Carlos Martinez.
Yeah, that is true. And we're looking forward to having him for an extended period of time. Now, that being said, fandom is fickle.
Yes,
and
very fickle.
We are seeing that to some degree in the fact that it's what have you done for me lately? And I say this because I've kind of been in the same boat. I'm not casting aspersions on anyone. But Matt Carpenter is continuing to struggle. You know, we've talked about it before. We've talked about the fact that his walk rate seems to be still pretty solid. Although I'm not just looking here at July's numbers. It seems like that may be a little bit down. He's walked all of, not counting tonight, walked 9 times in 19 games and 17 starts. He's hitting 171 over that span. I think I'd have to pull up the box score. I think he probably got a hit tonight, but.
I think he had double, but go ahead.
Yeah, I think, I remember him being on second base now that you
his
say
first,
that.
His first double since June 28th, man.
Yeah, cause he has 2 home runs in July. Those are his only 2 extra base hits. And that one home run, like I say, one home run against Kansas City last night. That was kind of weather aided. I didn't think that ball was getting out and it just kept carrying. So,
yeah.
What do you do? I know Bernie's got an article here. I haven't had a chance to read it. I've just kind of pulled it up. The headline is talking about moving him back to the leadoff spot because that's where he's comfortable. That's where he's been good. We saw, you know, Matheny has struggled and gone, put him in the 7th spot, probably take some pressure off, hoping to keep the offense going. You know, Colton Wong is struggling as well, so it wouldn't hurt necessarily to put Carpenter back up there. Is that what they should do?
You know, I wrote a column yesterday that got a lot of attention about, you know, is this Alan Craig? And by the end of the column, I said it's not, because I think Matt Carpenter still gives the Cardinals a lot. It's funny, may I add, that people really jumped on me about that without reading the whole article. And this happens a lot when you're a blogger. You know, you write a column and people go, how dare you? And by the end of the column, you're saying, no, he's not Alan Craig. It's not that. He's fine. But, and I do think Mike Carpenter's, his drop off is very alarming. And I'm with you. I mean, I think, you know, he has two home runs and a double now in July. And this is a guy who used to crank doubles like it was me having coffee. It was pretty much one or two a day. So, I mean, it really does make you think, what can you do to make him better? And he's a guy that, you know, in the post game last night, he's talking about just, hey, all I do, I show up every day. I try to get better. And I think everybody's trying to diagnose his problem except for Matt Carpenter himself. And I do think Bernie's point, I read his article, and he just kind of says, you know, you go with what's worked. I mean, if all you have to lean on is that Matt Carpenter has been a great leadoff hitter when he's hit leadoff. And I know the Cardinals briefly moved him back in there in Pittsburgh right before the All-Star break. He got some starts there. He had a couple, one okay game, a couple, you know, kind of not-so-good ones. And he's a guy that, to me, the reason I brought out the Alan Craig thing is because we expected Alan Craig to be able to spray the ball around the field, drive in runs. I mean, when we come to expect Matt Carpenter, we expect him to draw walks, get doubles, get on base, and he stopped doing that since June 1st. I mean, even since the middle of May. And you see his splits down from month to month go from 269 to 190 in June to 177. And John Nagel, once again, told, you know, kind of pointed out that his line drive rate is a little unlucky. And that's great, but, I mean, how do you stretch a line drive rate being unlucky over 3 months? It just kind of tells you that there is something wrong. And if it's not medical, then, you know, I don't know how you fix it. And if it is mental, maybe you do move him back to first base. Maybe, you know, Colton Wong isn't having a great stretch up there. Maybe you move him back to two. Maybe you move him down to six or seven, and you let Mike Carpenter go at leadoff for, like, you know, 5 to 6 games. See if he catches fire. See if he gets back in that top spot and clicks. But I've held out that, you know, I'm not sure moving the guy up one spot is going to do that much well. I never heard of a guy. I mean, you couldn't, like, you know, tell me to leave for work 10 minutes earlier and think I'm having a better day at work. I mean, it's just one of those things where I'm not sure moving the leadoff is going to help out. But I think if you're just trying to anything to help him click back into that Matt Carpenter that we know. Now, we all know that he dropped off in 2014 from an otherworldly superhero-like 2013 season. But, I mean, this season, after a great, mesmerizing April where he hit doubles, he got on base, in May something happened. And the whole dehydration issue, the exhaustion, do the Cardinals go, hey, go back to your routine before May 2nd. Go back to what you're doing. Maybe you tell him to do that until he just runs himself into the ground running, you know, sprints and laps and lifting weights before the game. I don't know what he was doing. But I do feel, if one way I do feel for Mike Matheny and not knowing what to do with him. I mean, you want to keep his confidence up, but you also want to give your team the best chance to win. And while this is nowhere near Alan Craig's predicament, I think you do have to maybe put him back in that leadoff spot. See what happens. You don't really have an option there outside of Colton Wong, who's not really doing that well. And Colton Wong's more of a guy who gives you some pop. You can move him down in the middle of the order with his, you know, his double-digit home runs. But and I think people are really going to jump on that, okay, he hit a home run last night. Yeah, he hit one home run. I mean, even Mark Reynolds hits a home run once every few days. It's not really something you can really build on. I mean, Matt Carpenter, he hit a double tonight. Maybe he starts to climb out of it. But I think if you do want to give it this one last remedy and say, okay, let's just put him back in a leadoff role for an extended period of time and see what he can do, I don't think that's a horrible idea, but I also don't think it's going to work.
Yeah, it's, I don't know.
It's puzzling. It's so puzzling. I mean, every time I talk about Matt Carpenter, I feel like I'm being, like, you know, pigeon, I kind of spoke from behind by Cardinal Nation because of how beloved and good he has been. But I also go, this guy, his splits from month to month are just alarming.
That is, there's no doubt that that is true. I don't know. We saw how much that being, in the, leadoff role affected Jason Hayward. He's talked about the mindset, and obviously there's a difference between a more significant difference, as you're saying, between first and putting him fourth or fifth. but it seems to have worked. It's a mindset to some degree, and these guys are really looking to be in that comfortable mindset, and that's what Carpenter knows. I'm not going to argue that it should be. It's kind of questionable, but his on base percentage is even struggling is better than and then Colton Wong's. And we've seen way too many offers out of Colton Wong, especially lately. I think I like Wong's bat, especially with his power potential, back down in that 6th and 7th spot. I think he turned it and pitched and did better there. I'm not looking up the stats. I could be easily wrong, but it felt like he was much better then. So I don't have a problem putting him back up there because I don't think it's going to do anything major. I wrote about it some on my blog earlier this week and had some discussion in the comments, and we talked about who would do it if it's not, you know, if it's not Carpenter, if it's not Wong.
I'm not sure what you do.
You know, the idea, I said, you know, I'd be kind of interested to see Holiday there, but nobody's ever going to do that. that's what the discussion was, you know, who I was discussing with also was fond of Holiday being in that spot.
I'll tell you what. He'll never hit a double plays if he leads off.
Well, no.
At least maybe not as often.
He won't do it in the first inning. We know that.
No, he will not. And, you know, and I'm with you. I mean, and by the way, everybody should read Choctaw's blog. He's one of the best guys that I've read. He's a guy that I must say that actually gave me my first shot at being the United Cardinal bloggers a season and a half ago. So everybody should go read him at Cards Conclave. He writes good stuff every day.
Well, let's not get too carried away here.
Hey, come on. It's my little air time to kind of give you a little bit of some goodwill. But hey, I mean it, man. I mean you're good. Hey, you know, and like Choctaw, I mean every day, I mean Monday through Friday, he gives you a pretty blunt stroke. I mean, there's a lot of guys out there who drink the Kool-Aid and won't write anything, you know, cynical or analytical about the Cardinals, but you know, like me, you know, Choctaw kind of drives a give you an honest take, and I think with Matt Carpenter, I think we're both kind of like, I mean, what else can you do?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we'll see, and it may depend on whatever John Mozeliak does in the trade market. I mean, maybe he brings in a guy that shuffles this lineup enough that, you know, Carpenter has to slide back up into that role, or somebody, maybe whoever else, the new guy, could be a guy that's interested, although it would seem unlikely. I don't know. But, you know, right now the pitching staff is meaning that you don't have to score but 3 or 4 runs. I don't know that you – and we keep saying pitching staff can't last. This pitching staff, I mean, it's great. It's awesome. They're great people, but they just can't keep this up.
They can.
But, yeah, I mean, we're in the end of July now.
And, yeah.
You know, I mean they got 2 more months, but you get into September, you're facing a lot of teams that bring in up their, you know, prospects. You can stretch things out. You know, it's tough to say they can't make this happen for a little bit longer.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then you get into the playoffs, and the playoffs tend to be low scoring affairs, especially nowadays.
Yep.
So, you know, what's to say, you know, if they can put 4 runs up on a regular basis, which has not always been the case, but if they can, that could win them a lot of games.
Well, yeah, I mean, you also have a lot of guys like Gonzalez, who's just kind of starting his season. I mean, this guy's still trying to remain healthy, and we're almost more than halfway into the season. You got a guy like Jaime Garcia, who's made 7 starts. So you got guys that... And you also have guys like John Lackey, as we know it last night, whose road and home splits are getting a lot better. I mean, 6 of his last 7 road starts, John Lackey's been very good. So you see guys that are trending better. You know, when they should be breaking down, these Cardinals starters are just getting better and better. I mean, Lance Lynn probably deserves 10 wins by now, but he hasn't gotten the run support. And you got guys like Waka, who's getting the run support and getting the wins, but he's not pitching so well. So you have kind of like Cardinal pitchers picking other pitchers up. And you have guys like Garcia and Gonzalez who are just coming back into the fray, and guys like Cooney who are just kind of coming into their own. So I think it just tells you once again how deep this pitching staff is. I mean, look at the bullpen. You bring up a guy like Sam Tuivalala. He's pitching big innings. You go out and get a guy like C-Sheck. You have a guy like Walden coming back. I think if the rotation, like the rest of the team, is bided their time until they're getting healthy, I think I can't see this whole operation going downward. I just see guys picking others up, like Lackey getting better on the road, Garcia coming back from an injury. You have Lynn, who's quietly having another very good year. He just doesn't have the wins for it. And you know, you have guys that you have production coming from every seeming, I mean, every corner of this franchise, and from some areas where we you didn't think you'd get a lot. I mean, I wasn't sure we'd even get seven starts from Garcia, and now he's coming back by getting ready to make his eighth. So I think it's just a bunch of it's unexpected ammunition that Mozeliak's gotten from his pitching staff, and I think it's just going to get better with the way they're getting healthier.
Most likely, you know, and again, schedule gets. We've talked about it before. Schedule's a lot easier down the stretch. You're going to start running into these teams that are going to pack it up kind of for the year. And I don't say that they give up, but they tend to, you know, try out new people. They try to try different things, see how that works. So, and you know, the closer you get to clinching, the better. It's not like they're right there at it, but a 6-game lead on Pittsburgh, 10.5 on the Cubs, who are tied for the second wild card spot. I mean, you're about as close to guaranteeing some sort of postseason as you can get at the end of July. So, you know, I don't know. We talked, let's before we kind of get into the last little section, and we've already gone an hour, so we'll try to wrap somewhere along the way. We talked about Cishek coming over. We didn't talk about who's going to go down, and we don't know. You know, they've moved Belisle, so that's how he gets on the 40-man. When you see the end of this, what do you think is going to be the last move for Mo? Who goes down to make room for him?
You know, I mean, we talked about it tonight with maybe Dan Johnson going down, but of course, you know, he has to clear waivers. I mean, there's a time where maybe you send down Sokolovich because you bring up a guy like Cishek and you have a guy like Sokolovich go down. I'm not sure. I mean, I think about what guy is not giving the team a lot right now. We saw Dan Johnson get two quick hits in his Cardinals kind of entrance in Wrigley Field. I think he's a guy that if the Cardinals feel confident that they aren't going to need him. I mean, he's also kind of a veteran guy, so I think the Cardinals are going to need him. He goes on to Memphis. Is this going to be for the season? You have other guys that can play that role. So I think he's my first candidate if John Mozeliak wants him to be able to pass through waivers and possibly get claimed. But I'm not sure other teams are going to be biting too much. So he's kind of my guy. If the team kind of wants to go back to that 13 pitcher, which I know me and you don't like, it could be Sokolovich or it could be a Dan Johnson.
Yeah, the only problem with Dan Johnson is that he would have to clear waivers to go down. And yeah. Not saying that he wouldn't, and not saying that the Cardinals shouldn't make that kind of move, but I think they'll probably keep him up unless they have to. I think that, I kind of think that Tuivala may go back down and let him pitch in the eighth and ninth inning in Memphis, because he's not going to get a whole lot of ending game situations here. But, you know, we'll have to see.
I think Cishek's going to get a lot of his chances, so I do agree with that. As far as keeping a guy like Sam, who's just really in his second year of pitching, as I mentioned earlier, a guy who I didn't think was going to pitch this many high leverage situations, and he comes up, he's pitching in the seventh, he's pitching in the eighth, he's pitching in Pittsburgh. I think he's a guy the Cardinals want to keep fresh. They don't want to have him sit in the bench down there in the bullpen. So I do kind of agree with that. If Cishek comes back, that's a pretty easy, seamless move. You've already moved Matt Ball out of the 60-day DL, so Cishek's on the 40-man. And I think in order to keep, if they want to keep their bench kind of strong, keep Dan Johnson and risk not losing him in waivers, I do agree. I think Sam's a good move because the kid's very young and you want him to keep pitching. I mean, with that kind of a live arm, you kind of wanted to see innings.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, and when Piscotty was the other part of this roster machinations that we're seeing, when Piscotty was activated, the Cardinals had to make some sort of move, and they wound up waiving Ty Kelly, who was pretty much immediately picked up by the Blue Jays. There's other names that I could have seen being taken off of the roster. I know a lot of people said, oh, Cosmo's going to go. Cosmo wasn't going to go.
That's not going to happen.
Well, and right now, I have a feeling the Cardinals do not have confidence in Greg Garcia backing up Johnny Peralta. I think
they're
at least worried about the glove. And so Cosmo's going to be he's going to be on this team the rest of the year because there's nobody else to play that position. I was a little surprised, though, they didn't, you know, I could have seen, I think Dean Anna Although he's doing better than Kelly was, and I had not noticed that. But you got a lot of catchers, you got Ed Easley, things of that nature. You had Marcus Hatley that you could have gotten rid of. I was just a little surprised that they cut bait on Ty Kelly. But, you know, I guess he hadn't really shown a whole lot this year anyway.
Yeah, you know, he's a guy that I think the Cardinals kind of got to eventually be on this club. And I think that he just didn't really get that opportunity. You know, and down in Memphis, he didn't show enough for the Cardinals, I guess, to value him going forward. I mean, he's not too old, but he, like I said, he just didn't show enough. And myself, I thought Marcus Hatley was going to be the guy. I mean, you have a guy who isn't exactly young. He got a little audition in Wrigley. I'm not sure what kind of spot he's going to have in this bullpen going forward. I kind of picked him outside of the realm of possibility of going crazy and saying Cosma, but it's obviously not going to happen. But with, I was a little surprised by Ty Kelly, but I also think that they just kind of thought of a guy. If they have a guy like Greg Garcia and they have, I mean, other guys that they want, I mean, Aledmys Diaz, he actually played in spring for Springfield the other night in Little Rock, so he's actually playing again. It was a surprising move, but when I kind of looked at it a little bit, maybe that they just kind of saw a guy that they didn't have a place for.
Yeah, and I think that's probably a lot of it. It wasn't a big. It's not like it's a make or break thing. It was just a little bit surprising. And yeah, we're gonna have to see some stuff. You know, Walden's gonna be coming off the 40 man here soon. That may be the end of Hatley. You know, or whatever John Mozeliak does, if he does any more or trading, we'll have to see how that works out. Okay. I think we have talked for quite a bit on important stuff. We had a couple more Twitter questions that I appreciate that they were offered to us. I have to say they are probably not the weightiest issues that have come across our desk, but we will try to take them seriously. And one of them has to do with Mark Reynolds' hair and how important that Mark Reynolds' hair has been to this team and to the whole season as a whole. Now, as a guy that is obviously well focused on the hair issue, I will let you touch that one.
You know, for a guy that doesn't have any hair on top of his head, that cannot grow the angelic type hair that Mark Reynolds does. Now, there's no statistical data. There's no stats that will tell you that Mark Reynolds' beard or his hair is accountable for those 9 home runs and 35 RBIs, but I will beg to differ. I think there's part of that. I mean, as far as just a guy who Mark Reynolds' whole season, it's like watching a movie where the characters never happen to have to shave or never have to trim their beards. I'm a little jealous of Reynolds in this being he has the perfectly cuffed beard and his hair is always kind of like the right length. And for a guy that has to shave his head in order to look even have people to be able to look at him straight without having to wince. I mean, I'm a little bit jealous. I mean, he's kind of challenging Pete Cosma for the best hair in the team, and that might make Tara Wellman jump out of her seat. But it just comes to a guy that I never seen a guy maintain a beard more. I mean, you got, you know, Matt Holliday, who's never seemed to have a hair in his head the last 10 years, which for a guy who shaves his head, you know, it's a lot of work, people, if you have to shave your head every other day. And I've done that. And on the opposite spectrum, you have a guy like Mark Reynolds who doesn't seem to have to do anything to have the perfect beard and the perfect hair. So I will say that outside of his strikeout ratio, I am very jealous of Mark Reynolds and his ability to have perfect hair.
I think that it was Kevin Reynolds that went ahead and tweeted a picture out about Kevin, about Matt Holliday, and a picture of him like his rookie year with Colorado when he had hair. That was disturbing on a lot of different levels.
We're not used to that.
Yeah, I think that the hair situation, when you look at a guy like Mike Matheny, and his leadership in this regard, because Matheny obviously brings a good hair game, every day to the ballpark. Now, you know, he grew the beard. I honestly have to say I'm impressed, because I think when he left St. Louis on Sunday, he was clean shaven. And when he showed up, in Chicago on Tuesday, he had, you know, 2/3 of the beard already in. And it would take I haven't shaved in like 11 years. And that's because if I did, I'd never be able to grow it back in. So,
I grow hair. I'm Italian Lebanese. So I basically grow a 5 o'clock shadow in about 2 hours. So when it comes to me, I totally get where Matheny and Reynolds are coming from. I think if Pete Cosma could grow a beard, I think he'd have the title.
But I think because he can't grow facial hair, he never has, except for maybe a Brennan Ryan, like, you know, crazy looking mustache if he ever did. I think Reynolds has the best hair just because he can rock that beard. It seems like he can snap his fingers and have a very, and it also, no offense to Matheny, it's a blonde beard, and it just gives you extra brownie points. I mean, it seems like there's a dime a dozen of guys out there with dark brown to black hair beards. I mean, those, seeing that is kind of like going in Schnucks and, you know, and seeing a bunch of different kinds of coffee. You see a blonde beard, it just makes you think about Patrick Swayze in Point Break. It makes you jealous.
All right, and I think our other question had to do with Peter Borges and where he stands on the scale of most attractive Cardinals. I don't know why we get these questions.
Hey, why not? Nobody else does.
So I'll let you handle that one too, because I couldn't tell you.
Okay, well, you know, everybody, ladies and gentlemen, my wife watches the games with me. She's a very good wife. I mean, when we're not watching baseball, I have to watch Home Improvement channels, and that's very torturous for me. So she actually likes baseball, and I kind of register how good-looking a player is by how many times she looks up from her phone. And I'm sorry, but Peter Borges is way behind Randall Grichuk when it comes to how many times my wife will put down her, not just stop clicking her games, her little Facebook games that she plays, but she will put the phone down and watch Grichuk take swings. And I'm sure it's not for the ability that I think he can hit a baseball 101 miles an hour. I think it's for the fact that he's the most good looking Cardinal. I asked her when I said, right, you know, Rachel, what do you think about Peter Borges? And she's like, yeah. And that basically for my wife means no. So as far as my house is concerned, Randall Grichuk is the hottest Cardinal. Now, while Matt Holliday may look like her husband times seven as far as size and just muscle mass, he gets some brownie points, but as far as just being kind of a cutie and this overall gorgeous, more gorgeous than Borges, I think Randall Grichuk has that title right now.
You said that about Matt Holliday. I'm going to tell a story that goes back a ways. The first UCB weekend, which was 4 years ago, I think. Now we've had four of those. 2011. Because it was, the Cardinals won the series that year. The first one, there was a blog called Diamond Diaries, Cardinal Diamond Diaries, which Tara Wellman was writing at, Christine Coleman, who we know from Aaron Miles Fastball, and another girl, Erica, wrote for that. And they showed up at the ballpark on that day, and this was the year that Matt Holliday had, you know, hit the home run on opening day and then had the appendicitis and had his appendix taken out, like, right after the game. And so he's on the disabled list. We look, and this Erica is sitting in front of the Busch Stadium, and she's talking to somebody. And I think if you had told, you would have put money that she was talking to Matt Holliday. He was bald. He had a shaved head. He was wearing, I think, a Holiday jersey at the time. It was actually it was her husband. And so he was almost a dead ringer for Matt Holliday. Something that we continued to remind her about constantly. So
oh yeah.
You know. So apparently, she did better than your wife did in that situation.
Yeah, she did. Because my wife, before I covered the Cardinals at last year's 2014 Winter Warm-Up, I had to tell my wife I was not as big as Matt Holliday, because my wife is very nice. She loves her husband. She's generous. She puts up with me, which, let me tell you, is not an easy job, being how much I write and how much I watch Cardinal baseball and movies. I'm pretty much really only living in reality about, you know, about a month out of the whole year. So, I mean, when it comes to telling her, honey, I appreciate you being nice to me, but I am about the fourth. So I think Holliday could buy a bench with one arm, and when I saw him at the Winter Warm-Up, up, I was like, I took a picture and I said, Matt, let me do this real quick because I need to reassure my wife that I am not anywhere as big as you. And he was like, okay. And I took a picture of him up close, and I think my phone shook just because this guy is like almost about as big as The Rock. I mean, up close, he's just supersized muscle. I asked him, you know, I told him, hey, I had lunch at Subway. Did you eat at Lowe's? Did you have some drill bits or some lumber? Because the guy is just a monstrous guy in person. I mean, people, TV doesn't have to add 10 pounds to Holliday, but he's already got 30 on it, because the guy is just he's a monster. And he's a guy that, you know, I mean, this is a guy who has gotten older to be age 35, and I think he's in better shape than he was when he was 25, just because of the diet he keeps and the way he works out. And for guys like me, whenever I'm on the couch and I need to go work out, I just go, up, time to be like Matt Holliday and go, you know, lift a weight or try to imitate Matt Holliday at the very least.
That's the good thing about not caring. You don't have to worry about trying to be like Matt Holliday. And so it's a lot easier.
Darn it.
You know, you don't have to worry about it. So anyway, I think we've done enough on the Cardinals. Quickly, movies, because that's what we do at the end of the show. We both saw Ant-Man this week. I know you wrote about it, let people know what you thought about the latest Marvel movie.
You know, I said I think this is the most family-friendly Avenger. I think this is one you could take the whole family to, grandma, mom, and dad. I think with Paul Rudd, and I think it has to do with Paul Rudd. I think he kind of made this film work. I think when you think about Ant-Man, you go, okay, they really can't make this into a movie. I mean, but then when it comes to Marvel, they can do anything they want these days because they've created the Avengers and they've created all these great stories and people. And I think Paul Rudd makes this movie work. I think his likable persona, the way that he's been built up in Hollywood as this likable person, you know, romantic comedies, and he's always kind of the easy presence to kind of fall in love with. And you also got, you know, Michael Douglas and my clone, Corey Stoll, playing the bad guy. You know, I mean, I think it's a movie that anybody can like because it's very light. I think if you get turned off by the Dark Knight films that really everything is just so dark and very serious and morals are at play, I think Ant-Man is on the other side of the spectrum. He's more towards the Iron Man as far as being light. You have a guy, a thief, who's basically pulled into the world of becoming superheroic when he puts on a suit and he shrinks down to the size of an ant. He fights crime. I just think that's fun, and I think the way that they handled it was really good. I mean, Peyton Reed stepped in for director Joe Wright mid-production. That gave everybody kind of a scare, but I think Paul Rudd kind of makes it all work, and it's an easygoing movie. It goes about maybe an hour and 40. It doesn't even feel that long. It doesn't waste any time. He's a thief who kind of becomes a hero. He fights the bad guys. Michael Douglas is very good in it. It's got some good effects. I think the way that I don't know about you. I think the way that they dance with him, they kind of made it seem almost about as realistic as they could.
Yeah, it worked. It worked well. You know, like you said, I'd heard about Edgar Wright being in the, you know, removed, and then they had
yes, Edgar
that
Wright,
stuff.
Not Joe Wright.
It turned out well. I agree. I think that, you know, there's language in it, which is expected, I guess, to some degree. But really, for the most part, it's the comic book balance, which it depends on what, you know, what level you're going with. But yeah, it seemed it was fairly family friendly if you can handle such things. And if you can't handle such things, you probably haven't watched a lot of the other Marvel movies, because I don't think there's anything in that one. The language is a little bit better than Guardians of the Galaxy, which really packed it on there at the end of the movie.
It did.
Which is why my son hasn't seen that one. But anyway, I enjoyed it. I think it's a good one, and it was a lot of fun. And like a lot of people have said, it was kind of nice not to have the fate of the world resting on this. This
yes.
was a much lower scale, heist movie.
And I also think it was good to have him be kind of a self-deprecating guy. It's like, he even tells one person, like, yeah, I know the name's not that good. And really what makes that kind of line sing is a guy like Paul Rudd, who we all just kind of like. I mean, I think if you choose a different actor, the whole film might get thrown off. I mean, I think Marvel knew what they were doing when they picked Paul Rudd. I mean, of course, as they can do with any actor in Hollywood, they throw a six-pack on the guy like it just happens overnight, and everybody gets jealous of that factor. But I think it's just his comedic persona, the way he kind of makes scenes seem a little bit lighter than they're supposed to be. And, yeah, Ant-Man was really good, but I saw a movie that now it's a little more violent. If the adults want to go out and see something, the movie, the new boxing film, Southpaw, is very good. Southpaw is probably the first film I've seen this year where I've really wanted to go back and watch it again. It's a movie that centers on, it's kind of like a Rocky, if it's just a little bit darker story, a guy who's a very well-regarded boxer. He wins a fight, but he kind of loses everything in his life, and he has to rebuild from the inside out. And it's done by the director of Training Day. It's written by the creator of Sons of Anarchy. And if anybody's followed the career of Jake Gyllenhaal, this is a guy that I didn't really think much of like 10 years ago, but he's really grown into some really good roles, and he's also an actor who isn't afraid to do anything on film. He doesn't pigeonhole himself into one genre, and here he plays a guy who's kind of like a Rocky type figure, if it's just a little bit more broken with hard luck. I mean, picture if you took away Adrian from Rocky early on in his life, and you'd have Billy Hope, who is played by Jake Gyllenhaal here, and you have Forrest Whitaker, who kind of plays the hardened Mickey-type trainer who's got to help build him back up. I just think it's one of those movies that's really moving, and the best scenes take place out of the ring with Gyllenhaal and his daughter in the movie. It's a movie that really, it didn't surprise me because I knew I was going to like it, but it didn't. I didn't expect to be moved as much by it. So if the parents want to kind of get out for a date night, check out Southpaw.
Well, we're closing in on midnight here in the central time zone, and Dan has taken off to Paducah, Kentucky. So I believe you're are you in the eastern by now?
I am actually still in. I'm right on the edge of the central time zone, so I am still around midnight.
Okay. Well, like I said, I know I've driven that way to Ohio a number of times, seen the signs for Paducah, not actually gone. I couldn't remember exactly where it was at. Anyway, I think we have done all the damage that we should or could do. Well, maybe not all we could do, but definitely all we should do for this one. Next week, the Cardinals have, you know, they finish up with the Braves, have three with the Reds, and then four with the Rockies. I will be, as we've mentioned before, I will be at the games on Tuesday and Wednesday of next week, but I believe we'll be back in time to record episode 8 next week after that, and hopefully I'm sure we will have some sort of trade talk to talk about, whether it's a new move made or moves that haven't been, but it should be a lot of fun. So, for Dan, I'm Daniel. We'll talk to you next week. Night. Thanks for listening to The Best Dance in Baseball. We'd love to have your feedback on the show. Email us at bestdanceinbaseball@gmail.com. Dan Buffa can be found on Twitter at Buffa82, Daniel Shoptaw at C70. The show's Twitter handle is bestdan, BASEBAL1. You can also find us on Facebook under Best Dance in Baseball.